You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks, along with Rob Rang. We are officially in the offseason, our first Throwback Tuesday episode of the offseason. We have a long time until the Seahawks are going to be back on the field, but tons to talk about. We're going to start that offseason process today by looking at the offensive free agent signings that were made by John Schneider. A little bit of retrospective here. We're going to be doing that every Tuesday for the next month or so, as we look back at all the moves the Seahawks made, which ones worked and which one didn't. So we've got a jam-packed show coming your way. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Only a few short weeks ago, the Lions were rumored to have interest in hiring John Schneider for their vacant general manager position. Rob, I think it's safe to say the Seahawks, Jody Allen and company, gave a beast mode approved stiff arm to that notion today, giving the renowned executive a six-year extension. He is now under contract through the 2027 NFL draft. So a good chunk of this next decade, they now have John Schneider as well as Coach Pete Carroll under contract. The Seahawks brain trust with at least five more seasons together, assuming both of them go the full length of their respective contracts.
Yeah, this is a big deal. I mean, John Schneider, I think that deserves legitimate consideration for executive of the year in the NFL. I mean, he did a great job of piecing together a roster that would have been very difficult considering the fact that, you know, so much of Seattle's salary cap is tied up into Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner, and well-deserved in both cases, two terrific football players. But at the same time, this was a club that needed to improve its pass rush, and so they went out and got, you know, the most productive pass rushing defensive back of all time. They wound up making the late trade to get Carlos Dunlap. That they found a spectacular diamond in the rough type of player in DJ Reed. They stole from the 49ers, so this is a big move for the Seahawks, and I'm personally happy for not only Pete Carroll and the acknowledgement that he got when he got his contract, but the same for John Schneider in getting his extension as well.
Schneider takes a lot of flack from fans for missed free agent moves, missed trades, missed draft picks. And here's the thing, you and I both know this. Every NFL general manager has their share of misses in all of those regards. Go find me a perfect general manager that never makes a bad move, and I will point to a liar. They just don't exist. When you're looking in terms of consistency, though, building a winner, there may not be another general manager in the NFL that has done a better job than John Schneider has over the last 11 years. They've made the playoffs nine of those 11 seasons, and you mentioned it. I think a very strong argument can be made that this was one of John Schneider's better years this year. Not everything went perfectly as planned. We'll get to that in the second quarter. There were some free agent signings that didn't pan out, but the Jamal Adams trade, he broke the single-season record for defensive backs for sacks, and he missed four games. Played through some injuries. That trade's already paid dividends for them. The Carlos Dunlap trade was fantastic, and really that's just a long process. Ultimately, they traded Nick Vinette to get a fifth-round pick from the Pittsburgh Steelers. They turned that fifth-round pick into both Quandre Diggs and Carlos Dunlap over the last 2 years. That's when you know that you're talking about a very shrewd businessman in John Schneider. The DJ Reed claiming him off waivers, that move ended up paying huge dividends for the Seahawks. And I thought that Seattle, even with Daryl Taylor not playing a snap this year, I thought that their draft class did really well. They got a lot of contributions from several of those players. Jordan Brooks, Damian Lewis, Alton Robinson, DJ Dallas started a few games. They got good production from a sixth-round receiver in Freddie Swain. And so I think this was an outstanding year for John Schneider. You can make an argument one of his two or three best seasons in terms of the whole package, the moves that he was able to make in free agency, in the trade market, and in the draft. And so you put that together with the fact that he has had 24 Pro Bowlers in his 11 years in Seattle. He's had 12 different guys that have earned first or second team All-Pro selections, four players on the All-Decade team, Bobby Wagner, Richard Sherman, Marshawn Lynch, and Earl Thomas. and the Seahawks made it to back-to-back Super Bowls. They're consistently in the playoff hunt. There is not a guy out there that was more deserving of a big raise. We don't know how much money he got, but I can guarantee the Seahawks opened up the checkbook because this guy is one of the top two or three general managers in football, if not the best.
No, exactly. That's the thing. You know, I was fortunate enough, Corbin, as you well know, to have a podcast here with Scott McLuhan, who, you know, when I talk to scouts across the NFL, Scott McLuhan is still considered one of the truly elite talent evaluators in this business. And one of the things that Scott used to say, and I think that this carried on from his time under Ron Wolf, who is truly one of the legendary general managers in NFL history, is that basically the NFL draft, which is what a lot of people have criticized Schneider about, because obviously Seattle has not had the production with their first round picks that maybe you would expect for a general manager who is as highly regarded as Schneider is across the league, is that the NFL draft is a little bit of a dartboard, and that you basically want as many darts as you possibly can to throw up against that board. And while you may want to, you know, while some are going to criticize the Seahawks for their lack of success in the first round, then you certainly have to give them some credit for their selections that they've made in the later rounds, where Seattle has been absolutely amazing with their ability to find those players on the second and day three, as well as undrafted free agents. And so that's one of the things that I think that really does separate the good general managers from the great ones. And John Schneider has proven it over the long term that he is one of the great ones.
And yeah, you mentioned the undrafted free agent aspect. They're still bringing in quality players as undrafted free agents, and it's been a lot harder to make this roster. And this year, it was extremely difficult for any undrafted free agent to have any chance when you don't have a normal offseason program. They had a few guys that played well. We just got to see one of them in Cedric Lattimore that made his NFL debut in the playoff game on Saturday. They've got some guys that were on their practice squad that they liked, but Puna Ford, Brian Monet are just a few names recently that have been able to make a big impact for the Seahawks defensively that were not drafted. And so, again, kudos to John Schneider and his scouting staff for being able to find those players and knowing which players you got to make trades for. Certainly, there were a few misses here and there, but again, every general manager is going to have those. No general manager has a perfect track record. And if I was a team and I had to pick a general manager to run my franchise and I had a choice of anybody, John Schneider would be right there as one of my top choices. And I'd probably lean towards picking him because he's really shown over the years that he is outstanding in every aspect of the job. Coming up next in the second quarter, we're going to be looking at the Seahawks free agent additions that they made last offseason on the offensive side of the football. Six players coming from outside organizations that joined the Seahawks. And we're going to be discussing the seasons that they had in Seattle, the outlook, and of course, handing out some quick grades for the 2020 season. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Are you ready for some football? The NFL playoffs are really heating up as we've got divisional round coverage coming up this weekend. There is only one place that has you covered and one place we trust, betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive 50%. Welcome bonus with your first deposit. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Throwback Tuesday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me as always, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. Betting on the NFL doesn't have to be a guessing game. If you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast, hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling, get daily picks and quick hitting advice to make the smartest possible wagers. Subscribe to the Locked On Bets podcast, brought to you by betonline.ag, wherever you get podcasts. Rob, we're officially in off-season mode. We're going to have a ton of time to talk about a lot of these different players and coming up in the upcoming months. As the new league year eventually arrives, we have free agency, the draft, all of those off-season activities. But let's start in retrospect here. It's fitting we're talking about this the day that John Schneider gets a long-term extension, one of the best general managers in football. We're going to look back at the moves that he made in free agency, particularly on the offensive side of the football today. We'll look at defense next Tuesday. The Seahawks had 6 offensive free agent signings before the new season, with players coming from outside organizations. We'll have a separate show to look at the players that they re-signed that were on the roster in 2019. I think we've got to start with what, in my opinion, is easily the best free agent move that John Schneider made, and that was signing Brandon Schell. I know he had a rough playoff game. Injuries wrecked at the end of his season, but one of the top 20 ranked pass protectors on Pro Football Focus, only gave up 5 quarterback hits the entire season. He truly was an upgrade over Jermaine Ifedi, and they didn't break the bank to sign him. And, oh, the really good news, he's got another year in his contract.
Yeah, that's a great point, you know, because Brandon Schell really did play a very underrated role, I think, in Seattle's success this season. You know, I was among those who really questioned that decision to sign Brandon Schell. I thought that Jermaine Ifedi would wind up proving to be a value for wound up being with the Chicago Bears, and he has that. But when Jermaine Ifedi was basically just released from Seattle and not, you know, not re-signed, I questioned them, and I sent in some of, you know, some questions to some of the guys that I know in that, you know, in that, on that team and in that front office. And the feedback I got is that they just felt like they could not trust Jermaine Ifedi, whether it be the false starts, whether it be the inconsistent play. That was the exact opposite of what Brandon Schell showed throughout much of this season. Now, it's kind of, as you mentioned, it's appropriate that we're talking about John Schneider and the free agent moves today. It is inappropriate, unfortunately, or at least poor timing, because Brandon Schell, of course, did struggle in Seattle's loss to the Rams just this past weekend. But you can't take that one game and just go in the microscope there, especially when he was coming off of injury. I thought that he had a spectacular debut season in Seattle, and as you said, he is locked up for one more year at a very palatable contract. And so again, kudos to John Schneider and the Seahawks for recognizing this being a quality player, somebody they could rely on moving forward.
I want to stay on the offensive line, because I gave the Seahawks a B for their signing of Brandon Schell. I think the grade would have been higher if not for the way the season ended. He played that well for most of the season, but I think we've got to give John Schneider and his staff a lot of credit for signing Cedric Ogbuehi as well, because Schell did miss a number of games at the end of the season. And you and I talked about on this show, Ogbuehi's first start against the Eagles was one of the worst performances I've seen by a tackle in the Pete Carroll era. He gave up 6 pressures. He gave up a sack. It probably could have been more than that if not for Russell Wilson escaping, but really played poorly. And then the next 3 games that he started at the end of the year, he started against 3 really good defenses, the Rams, Washington, and the 49ers, that have a ton of talent in their defensive front. And he played really well, both in pass protection and as a run blocker in those games. And the Seahawks were able to win all 3 of those contests. The offense wasn't lighting it on fire, but I thought Ogbuehi played really well. And it's funny, when we look back at last year when they signed him, almost $3 million for 1 year for a reserve, you and I were skeptical of that, wondering why they paid that price for a guy that hasn't started any games for a couple years. But I think he ended up earning his money with those 3 big-time starts at the end of the year. And so I got to give the Seahawks a C+. I almost gave him a B- for that move, just because of how well he played down the stretch.
Yeah, I think that I might have given them the B- for that, because I just think that this is, again, one of the theories, one of the strategies that Schneider and the Seahawks have shown that I think is a winning strategy, and that is gambling on so-called failed first-round picks. There's a reason why these players wind up being drafted as high as they were, why Cedric Ogbuehi was the first-round pick, a player that wound up not playing for the Seahawks this season, so I guess we have to give him an incomplete, but with Chance Warmack as well, you know, the guard that was a former top 10 selection, that's something that the Seahawks have done consistently, trying to kind of go back in time and see if they can coax some of that talent out of these players who maybe haven't lived up to huge expectations previously, but you just have some faith in your coaching staff that they might be able to correct whatever issues that might be. And so I think that the Seahawks won with Ogbuehi. They possibly could have won with Warmack, and that would tie me into the next grade with another former first-round pick that, again, Seattle took from a division rival in the running back back Carlos Hyde. And now, while Carlos Hyde did not wind up having the hugely successful statistics that maybe some anticipated, to me, again, that is just a reflection about the huge hit that Chris Carson was. And so another one of those day three selections that the Seahawks, wound up winning big on. So Carlos Hyde would be another player that I think absolutely deserves at least a grade in the C range. Again, the statistics aren't overpowering, but when Seattle called upon Carlos Hyde, he made some of Seattle's biggest runs and in some cases catches of the entire season.
That's the reason that I gave him a C, because he missed six games due to injury. That's worth noting. I don't think that he emerged as the complimentary running back to Chris Carson. And really, both those guys, there was a four-game stretch that neither one of them played. And so you have to consider the injuries and factor that in. But Hyde did have some really big plays. He had a couple huge games. The game that he went out and ran the football really well. When they played the Cardinals in Week 11, came up with a really big game. And then Chris Carson returned the week after. Hyde had the 50-yard touchdown and the win over Washington. So there were some big plays. That matchup against the Rams in Week 16, he caught a dump-off pass, ended up turning into an 18-yard gain, and Russell Wilson scored on a QB keeper a few plays later. And so Hyde made some big plays, and he stepped up as a third-down back late in the season when DJ Dallas and Travis Homer were both banged up. And so I got to give him a solid grade from that aspect. I think for the money they paid him, though, in the games he missed, I just can't go above a C with Carlos Hyde. But he was probably one of their better offensive free agent signings when you consider how these last three went. I hate knocking on Greg Olsen because you and I are both big fans. He's had an outstanding career. We really thought back in training camp, the way he and Russell Wilson were clicking, that Greg Olsen was going to have a pretty good season that was going to justify the $7 million one-year contract that the Seahawks gave Greg Olsen. Unfortunately, that chemistry never translated onto the game field. And he finished the season with just 24 receptions. His foot issues came back end of the season. He had a ruptured fascia. He came back late in the year, and he only played 8 snaps in the wild card game. He obviously was not close to being 100% healthy. He wanted to come back and make an impact. It just didn't happen. And so I have to give the Seahawks a D for their signing of Greg Olsen. The reason I'm going that low is just because the production, especially only having one touchdown, does not match the $7 million investment that they put in Greg Olsen. He just didn't come up as the red zone threat and the first down creating threat that they thought they were signing when they brought him in February.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that one, Corbin. You know, it is unfortunate because you're right. I mean, I remember sitting up there on that berm and watching the Seattle's training camp, and the rapport that he and Russell Wilson had immediately what was very exciting. I mean, I talked about this all year long, that I thought that one of the Seattle's real weaknesses this year was that their inability to find a consistent third target besides, obviously, their two dynamic wide receivers. And that's where I thought that Greg Olsen would be able to splash this year. I mean, we'd seen some of the big plays that Jacob Hollister, that Will Disley had been able to enjoy as that the secondary target in Seattle's offense. And I really thought that just the savviness of Greg Olsen and his incredibly soft hands, that he really would be able to hit the ground running. I thought that he might challenge to be one of Seattle's touchdown leaders this year. And so for him only to have the one touchdown reception, as you mentioned,
was in the season opener too.
Exactly. Was obviously such a huge disappointment. On the flip side, I think that you do have to come up with this, look at this realistically. I mean, this is a guy who is 36 years old. This is a franchise that generally has stayed away from signing older veterans. This one wound up biting them. But again, another first-round selection. And same thing with Philip Dorsett, another player that, again, they gambled on those first-round athletes. Unfortunately, with Greg Olsen and obviously with Philip Dorsett, who never was able to get onto the field for the Seahawks in a game, then that wound up being probably Seattle's worst of their free agent decisions. Although, again, you understand why they made the moves that they did.
Yeah, and I feel a little differently about the Dorsett one. Obviously, I'm giving it an F because he didn't play at all, and there's no other grade that you can provide there. It clearly backfired on him in that sense, and the fact they did not know about this foot issue when they signed him that apparently has been going on for several years, that's a little bit worrisome. But again, this is another player in training camp that when he was healthy at the beginning of camp, he and Russell Wilson were really hitting off. I think that's the reason Pete Carroll was saying on Monday that there's a good chance they're going to re-sign Philip Dorsett. He's not going to be expensive. You'll probably be able to bring him back on a similar deal that's around $1 million, not much more than the veteran minimum to bring him back next year. And you know that that foot issue has finally been corrected. They know the speed that he has. It's unfortunate that we never got to see that, because that is really one of the biggest question marks to me coming out of this season. How different would this passing game have looked with Philip Dorsett out there as their number three guy, instead of maybe David Moore, who then is your number four, would be an outstanding number four. Again, we're never going to know the answer to that, but certainly that's one that looms over. It's a contract that only didn't work out because of a lost season, has a chance maybe to get some redemption next year. And then the last one, the last offensive free agent signing, BJ Finney, if we were just considering his play for the Seahawks, it's obviously an F. You gave him a two-year, $8 million deal, and he didn't play a single offensive snap for you. But I'm actually going to give him a D because of the trade value aspect. They were able to throw his salary to the Cincinnati Bengals with a seventh-round pick to get Carlos Dunlap. And all Dunlap did is come in and get five sacks in the eight games with the Seahawks and really bolstered the rest of that defensive line. Everybody picked up their games with his presence. And so thank you, BJ Finney, for allowing us to get Carlos Dunlap and bring him to Seattle. For that reason, I can't give him an F, because at least something good came out of a contract that turned out being a disaster.
No, it did. But as you said, I mean, Seattle was able to spin that away to Cincinnati, wound up getting Carlos Dunlap. I do believe that the signing of BJ Finney pushed Ethan Posick that much more and gave the Seahawks a little bit of comfort that they had a guy who had started in the NFL level at the center position. And so I think that that it was important as well. But you're right, on the field, just as much as we were excited about what Greg Olsen was providing the Seahawks during that time, BJ Finney looked pretty bad. And it was pretty obvious from the get-go. And I love that you mentioned the injury concern with Philip Dorsett. That, to me, is something that Seattle does need to look at closer. Obviously, with the injury of Dorsett, that this is, it's been widely reported, this is a pre-existing injury. I know we're focusing on offensive players, but the same type of situation with Quentin Dunbar, the same type of situation with Daryl Taylor, the same type of situation. Marquise Blair has struggled with injuries all throughout his collegiate career as well. So that is a little bit of a disturbing trend. If we want to kind of throw stones here with John Schneider and the Seahawks front office and their medical team, then their struggles with drafting or signing free agents that have had medical injuries in the past, that obviously bit them significantly in 2020.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. Again, we didn't get to see Dorsett out there at all. I don't want to necessarily blame John Schneider for that, because I don't think anybody thought that Dorsett was going to miss the entire season. But as you said, the medical checkups, that needs to be cleaned up for this team. It's reared its ugly head in the draft. It's reared its ugly head in free agency with trades. All three of those areas, they have taken on players that were clearly not healthy or have had durability concerns that maybe they didn't look into enough before they ended up bringing them onto the roster. So I have to give Schneider a C-. And the reason that it's that low is because those last couple of contracts we talked about, there were some name players that they brought in, like Greg Olsen, Philip Dorsett, and those just didn't work. And unfortunately, you can't get much better of a grade than that, given the circumstances. But we will look at defensive free agent signings next Tuesday on our Throwback Tuesday segment. When we come back for the third quarter, it's our last takeaway segment of the 2020 season. We're going to look back at the defensive performance from Seattle's wild card loss to the Rams on Saturday. Don't go away. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique, remarkably easy to navigate, and all the parts are available for your vehicle. Choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck right locked in their How Did You Hear About Us box, so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. Welcome back, 12. This is your host, Corbin Smith, along with Rob Rang. Glad to have you listening to Locked On Seahawks Tuesday edition. For some NFL teams, the games may be over, but the work is just beginning. Join Trevor Sikma and Benjamin Solak of the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast every Tuesday as they start their Team Takeover Tuesday offseason series. Each week, they pick a new team. They take a deep dive into potential front office and head coaching signings, a roster review, free agent strategies, and go through a team-centric mock draft. That's every Tuesday over at Locked On NFL Draft. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. The Seahawks 2020 season coming to an end on Saturday in the wild card round, a disappointing defeat. The offense, as we mentioned yesterday, really did not show up at all. You had the 151-yard bomb to DK Metcalf and then a garbage touchdown to Metcalf at the end of the game when the outcome had already been secured and the Rams are going to be advancing the divisional round. At least today, there will be a bit more positives. The Seahawks' defensive performance, I think you and I would both agree, it was not as good as they had been playing in the previous month and a half. They did give up 23 points in this football game to the Rams, but I think they got put into some really tough situations. They were on the field a lot more than the Seahawks were offensively because they could not convert on third downs. And so to me, that was the biggest reason that the run defense struggled. They had some issues up front in the trenches. Cam Akers being healthy was a big difference maker compared to the running backs that they were facing in the Week 16 matchup. So that was really one of the underlying themes of this game. They had their issues slowing down the run. The Rams were able to take advantage of that, took pressure off of a not close to 100% Jared Goff after he checked back into the game. And so that really was one of the bigger negatives. But otherwise, I thought that the Seahawks defense still played pretty well, starting with the fact that they were able to generate consistent pressure regardless of who was playing quarterback.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Because I think that if you just had somebody who did not watch the game itself and saw that Seattle had given up 30 points in this loss, and obviously, as you alluded to, only 23 points there by the defense, then I think that people might be shocked to hear us say that the Seahawks defense actually played pretty well. But besides the most important statistic, which is the score, there's another statistic out there from this game that I thought really demonstrate how well Seattle played, and that is that they only allowed 3 out of 15 third down conversions mm-hmm. by the Rams. And Seattle only had 2 of 14 themselves, but not only 3 out of 15 on third down conversions, at 0-2 they were able to hold the Rams to 0-2 on fourth down conversion, so which obviously are essentially turnovers as well. And so that to me is one of the reasons why Seattle was in this game, because their offense for the most part was pretty abysmal throughout this game against the Rams. Now, all of that said, that's basically the extent of the kudos I'm going to give this team, because they did need to create some turnovers. They obviously were unable to do that. Bobby Wagner put up incredible statistics in terms of his solo tackles. It was one of his most statistically impressive games of the year, but you really watch it on tape and you'll see some missed tackles as well out there. Jamal Adams, obviously the splashy addition that he was. There was a couple of different times where he was in position to make some big plays in the pass game, at least get some deflections, was unable to do that. And so that was disappointing. Carlos Dunlap, as much of a huge addition as I believe that he was to this team, again, if you look at the box score, he wasn't very productive other than the one snuffing out the pass that the Rams tried to throw basically in his face earlier in the game. So again, some of your huge additions were not able to make the big plays when you needed them to. But again, the one thing that I kind of come back to in this game is that the way that Seattle was able to shut down the Rams passing attack. And I had some huge concerns about that. Jared Goff is a good player. Those Rams wide receivers are absolutely dynamic and they shut that down for the most part. And then, oh, by the way, before we even get into the going up against the passing game, they were obviously, Seattle was preparing for John Wolford the entire time. And Wolford gets knocked out of the game by Jamal Adams. So again, if we're going to say, throw some stones here and criticize, then we certainly have to give the Seahawks some credit where credit is due. And Adams having one of the big plays in this game, knocking out the starting quarterback, you would think that would have led Seattle to a victory. Obviously, that wound up not being the case.
Yeah, it really came down to a couple big plays. That's what really loomed large. And unfortunately, Jamal Adams playing it well below 100% was involved with two of them. The 44-yard dump-off pass to Cam Akers in the second quarter. They had another play in the first half where they threw a bomb downfield to Cooper Kupp. And you mentioned if Jamal Adams, if his shoulder's healthy, he might get his hand on that football. But he was not able to raise his arm up, and Kupp comes down with a reception. The Rams got points on both of those drives, and ultimately that ended up being a big difference maker for them late in the game. And of course, the touchdown at the end of the game as well, after DJ Reed fumbles the punt return, and then Jared Goff hits Robert Woods for the touchdown pass wide open, the 17-yarder, and suddenly it's 30-13. It's just those three plays jump out to me defensively. Again, this was not the best defensive effort the Seahawks have had over the last month and a half, 2 months, but they really gave up. When you go down to it, they really gave up 16 points because the Seahawks should have had the football when DJ Reed returned that punt. It put the defense in a really bad spot that fumble was recovered deep in Seahawks territory. It's very hard to keep a team out of the end zone when you only have that much yardage behind you. And so ultimately that's what happened. You mentioned Bobby Wagner. Yeah, there was a few missed tackles, but can you imagine where this defense would have been in this game without Bobby Wagner, especially the fact that he played the entire second half. We don't know what his injury was, but that did not look good at the end of the first half when he got his leg toppled over and he buckled. I thought for sure he had a significant knee injury, and yet after going to the locker room for about 10 seconds, comes shooting out of the tunnel. He played the entire second half, showing his toughness. He made the fourth most tackles in an NFL playoff game. And so I just can't even imagine what this defense would have looked like without Wagner, some of the plays that he made. And I thought Cedric Lattimore, the undrafted rookie out of Iowa that had never played in an NFL game, did he get knocked around on some plays? Absolutely. Did he make some really cool plays? Absolutely. He had six tackles in his first NFL game. And I think Pete Carroll summed it up best in the press conference on Monday. Lattimore is a player they've been really impressed with at practice all season long. They just couldn't find a way to get him up on the roster, especially when they had Damon Harrison on their team. Cedric Lattimore has a chance now to be a major factor in the defensive tackle rotation in 2021. And I think he now has some pretty good film to work off of that the coaching staff can have a chance to really evaluate him so that he can maybe get some playing time next season.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely a possibility. I mean, Seattle's track record at finding defensive tackles here, in the late rounds, undrafted free agents is bordering on ridiculous at this point. I mean, we talked about Brian Monet. We've talked about, Puna Ford, and now Cedric Lattimore. The defensive tackle position is one that you can invest an awful lot of money in on players. And for Seattle to have had the success that they've had there is very impressive. And as is Wagner's statistics, I mean, again, the statistics that he posted in that game, 11 solo stops. I have been highly critical of the lack of solo stops, the lack of assists, 11 solo stops in that game, 5 assists, a total of 16 tackles. Seattle's next closest tackler was Jordan Brooks with half that at 8. So again, a spectacular performance by Bobby Wagner, a sack as well. So that was certainly very encouraging, very inspirational, as you mentioned, going off the field and then coming back. And just imagine what a shot in that arm that is for his teammates. And so I think that definitely deserves some acknowledgement. If we are going to be acknowledging some of Seattle's defensive players individually, I think that we got to talk about Jaron Reed as well. You know, this was a guy that with his injury concerns going into this game, that I think that he just kind of showed his competitiveness. Now, this was not an elite Rams offensive line, although it certainly was a better one with Andrew Whitworth back on the field for them. But at the same time, I do think that Jaron Reed, as well as, I know we're talking defensive players, but DK Metcalf on the other side, his antics on the sideline, to me, while I don't like seeing that, it did show that they were very much in this game. They were competitive. They were, frankly, pissed off about how this game was going, and it was good to see some fight. That's one of the things I've always heard about Jaron Reed going back to his days at Alabama, is there's some dog in Jaron Reed, and he will fight. And so that's the thing, is that at times it felt like some of Seattle's players did not have that same kind of fight. Jaron Reed certainly brought that, and it was one of the reasons why Seattle was able to stay in this game, because of the two sacks that he was able to get against the Rams.
Yeah, Jaren Reed, Bobby Wagner, and Cedric Lattimore all played really well, especially, for, I mean, when you're talking Lattimore, a guy that had never played an NFL game, and he gets thrown into action because Jonathan Bullard gets put on the COVID reserve list hours before kickoff, and he gets promoted, wasn't expecting to play in this game. And so there were certainly some players that really stood out. I thought Jordan Brooks had a really solid playoff debut as well. This is really the bottom line. There were big plays that got away from this defense. They struggled to stop Cam Akers at times in this game, gave up some big chunk plays in the run game, but they forced 7 punts. And as you said, 3 for 15 on third down. When you consider those two stats, getting 2 stops on fourth down as well, this defense played more than good enough to win this football game. They still played well for the most part. And again, as we've been talking about the last couple of days, this really boils down to the offense had an opportunity here and they completely blew it. I thought the defense, could they have played better? Yeah, but they played well enough to win this game. And so really it was a strong finish for them considering how they played in the second half and how poor they played in the first half. I think that this is a game that they can build on defensively. There's some young players here like Lattimore, like Jordan Brooks, that really showed well in this game. And so there's a lot of reason to be encouraged. Whereas on the offensive side of the ball, it feels like, okay, well, what are we going to see from Russell Wilson next year? What is this offense going to look like? There are so many more question marks. Defense, you've got a lot of these players locked up through 2021 or longer, and you have a chance to extend some of the guys that aren't. And so this is a chance to be a really good top 5 caliber defense next year after that miracle turnaround they had the second half and playing quite well in the playoff game as well. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob as well at Rob Rang. Subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is, by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up on tomorrow's episode, we're going to start our rookie spotlight. We're going to be looking back at every one of the Seahawks draft picks from 2020. And of course, we'll sprinkle some undrafted players in there as well. And we are going to revisit one player every single Wednesday and Friday episode. It'll give us a chance to look back at their 2020 season and their outlook moving forward into 2021. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Go Hawks.